This is Take the State Roberts.
This is Ted DiBiase, the $1 Man.
Hey, this is Bob Backlund.
Hey, everyone, this is Rick Steiner.
This is the Honky Tonk Man, the greatest WWE Intercontinental Champion of all time.
This is your wrestling show, Ottawa.
Heck, they could use you guys over in WWE.
You're listening to the greatest wrestling show in the whole wide world.
This is Wrestling with Ideas.
Welcome inside the CKDJ studios for Wrestling with Ideas right here on CKDJ 107.9, Ottawa's new music. I'm the man they call Gibby, Zach McGibbon, and alongside me, over the Skype line, I guess you could say, we have a Bleacher Report WWE featured writer. He's also contributed for WhatCulture.com and does Wrestle Rant Radio. I have with me Graham GSM Matthews. Graham, how are you doing today?
Doing great, my man. What's going on?
Nothing much. You know, there's a lot going on in the wrestling world right now, and I'm glad to have you come on and discuss it. We got a lot of things to talk about, so let's get straight into the news. First things first, let's talk about the gauntlet match that happened on Raw. It's funny, with all that's gone on outside wrestling, it's kind of shocking that something from Raw has actually garnered some attention. The gauntlet match... As far as I know, the longest WWE match in history going back to the WWF days, an hour and 45 minutes this match went, and one of the key storylines that came out of it was Seth Rollins putting in an over 1 hour performance during this match, and he looked like an absolute superstar. And another thing, too, Braun Strowman looked really good as well in the gauntlet match. So I guess the question here is, what does this do for Rollins now? Jason Jordan is hurt, and now Rollins is on his own. There's been some talk that maybe he would face Kurt Angle at WrestleMania. But now seeing his performance, many people are saying, man, he should be doing a heck of a lot more. What are your thoughts, Graham? What do you think Seth Rollins has got to do to get ready for Mania?
Well, like you said, that performance on Monday's Raw was unreal. The match itself was fantastic, as you mentioned, effectively killing 2 hours, nearly 2 hours of TV time, which is unprecedented in today's WWE by any means. Like you said, one of the longest matches in WWE history dating back decades. And as you said, the standout star in that match was Seth Rollins, the true Iron Man of the WWE in many respects. Going forward to WrestleMania, this has been a hot topic for the last couple of weeks, with Jason Jordan's status, and it looked like they were headed towards a WrestleMania match. Before Jordan, it was Dean Ambrose, so which would have been a good match, but also with Ambrose, that's a match that we've seen before, and it's WrestleMania worthy, but and even if they reverse the roles with Rollins as the babyface and Ambrose as the heel, it's a match we've seen before. And with Jordan, that didn't really feel like a WrestleMania worthy match. It would have been, you know, a great wrestling match, but as a story, would people have really cared? It's debatable. I guess we'll never really know at this point. But moving forward into WrestleMania now, like you had mentioned, I've been saying this for a long time now, well before Jordan even got hurt, that to me, a bigger WrestleMania match than Rollins and Jordan, or even Rollins and Ambrose, is Rollins versus Kurt Angle. And it's not like it's completely coming out of thin air. Like if it's Seth Rollins and The Undertaker, like that would make absolutely no sense. But Rollins and Angle at least do have that built-in story there with Kurt's illegitimate son, storyline son, whatever, getting hurt, Jason Jordan, and the fans pooping all over that, and Rollins not really getting along with Jason Jordan, that whole thing. So it makes sense. As a match, it could be really, really good. I'm not going to sit here and say that it's going to be one of the greatest matches of all time, or at least not as good as it could have been maybe 5 or 6 years ago when Angle was still, maybe not in his prime, but still delivering like instant classics. And we haven't seen a lot of him in the ring recently. But even before he took the GM role for WWE, he was doing some stuff for Impact and a few other companies. And is not, at the same pace that he was a few years ago. But it would still be a really, really good match. And coming off that performance from Rollins on Monday, I have no doubt that if anyone can get a great match at a Kurt Angle at WrestleMania, it would be Seth freaking Rollins. So I would assume that's the match they're doing. Like you said, some people have said maybe they could be doing more with Seth Rollins. Maybe they could put him in the world title match at WrestleMania. But we've seen that before. We've literally seen in the main event of WrestleMania, Rollins, Reigns, and Lesnar for the belt. Albeit for like a minute or two at WrestleMania 31. But in the record books, it still says we got a three-way for that title at WrestleMania. And you could do a rematch, but... And I'm not even saying I'm too high on the idea of doing Brock and Roman one-on-one, but it just makes more sense. Yeah. So at this point, I would say Rollins and Angle is a high-profile WrestleMania match is the way to go.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny, like a lot of people you mentioned as well, that maybe Rollins could get inserted into the Reigns and Lesnar match, which is pretty much, I'd say, set in stone the way things are going. But again, I believe that the Kurt Angle match is where it's going to go. One of the things I'm going to look for if that match happens is I believe that Jason Jordan's going to have some sort of interference in the match, whether it be helping his dad beat Seth Rollins to win the match or whatever, because I still think that there's going to be more to this Jason Jordan and Seth Rollins dynamic that they want to do. But maybe, I don't know, this performance that he put in at the Gauntlet match, maybe it kind of shakes things up a little bit. It's like, maybe we got to, because Jordan is still at a certain level, right? He's still considered a mid-card guy that they're trying to push a little bit higher, maybe an upper mid-card, maybe barely low main event. But again, I agree. I think we're going to see Seth Rollins versus Kurt Angle at WrestleMania. But the way things are going now with Rollins, do you think the potential is there for a Reigns versus Lesnar versus Rollins at all with the way things are going with the way he did the Gauntlet match?
I mean, maybe. I mean, I could see that performance earning him a few brownie points in the back, and maybe, I don't know if it would earn him the WrestleMania main event. I mean, let's face it, Vince has had his mind set on this main event with Brock and Roman for literally a year now, not even exaggerating. I mean, we heard reports of this dating back to WrestleMania 33 and then the months preceding that pay-per-view, and that was a year ago, and it's February of 2018 as we speak. So I don't think they're gonna budge on that. They've had opportunities to put the belt on Joe, put the belt on Strowman, put the belt on this guy or that guy. They don't want to do it. Not to say they should put the belt on Rollins right now. They can't. I think the belt will obviously be on Brock until WrestleMania. But at this point, if they wanted to add Rollins to the match, I'm not saying it would be the worst thing. And they, like I said, they do have that built-in history from WrestleMania 31, and Rollins even mentioned it, and Roman mentioned it on Monday's Raw in their respective promos. But I don't know. I mean, they obviously want to put the belt on Roman. I guess you could still do that with a three-way. You can have Roman pin Rollins instead of Roman pinning Brock to protect Brock. I mean, I guess it really depends what Brock's future is, to be honest with you. If they really want Brock to stick around.
Yeah, and
they don't, you know, they don't want him to lose, and I could see them not wanting to pin Brock.
No, absolutely. And you were mentioning that, too. There have been some rumors that Brock may split from WWE after WrestleMania, and the most that he could stay with WWE is until SummerSlam. If that's the case, do you think that maybe if they want to try and keep Brock around, maybe they do put Rollins in, he takes the pinfall loss, and Brock still looks strong, and then Brock's thinking, oh, well, you know, he's taken a pinfall loss for me. That must mean the WWE is still interested in me in being this guy that can, you know, be essentially a money-making match guy. Because let's be honest, like, you know, Kevin Owens likes to talk about when he first started that he was a prize fighter. Like, the real prize fighter in WWE is Brock Lesnar. He's going to find, you know, a big match. He's going to be the guy that they're going to put into, like, the big four pay-per-views, whether it be Survivor Series, SummerSlam, WrestleMania, Royal Rumble. He's going to have some sort of big money match. Do you think that's going to be the case there? Do you think there's a potential there?
Yeah, they could still do that. I mean, I guess it depends what he wants to do. Obviously, a few years ago, there was the interest from UFC. Whether that's still the case, I'm not really sure. I know there was obviously talk of doing the John Jones-Brock Lesnar fight, but with John Jones' future obviously being up in the air as well in the UFC, that fight likely won't happen for a long time to come. So does he still want to go back there? I don't know. I mean, obviously, to come in and work a few dates like the Big Four with Brock Lesnar, it seems like an ideal schedule. He's not really doing all that much. He's not appearing in most Raws. I don't see the harm in it. It's got to be, you know, for the better as well. I mean, putting the belt on him for a year, thankfully, we're getting through it. It's almost over, thank God. But it's like, it doesn't really help when you have split brands, which I love the brand split. I am in full favor of the brand split. But it hurts the brand split when your top champion isn't even there for 11 months out of the year, and the other month he's, you know, on TV doing pay-per-views and whatever, even on the B-level pay-per-view. So I could see them bringing him back on, you know, a lesser schedule, or maybe even doing more dates. He's been doing a lot more dates now than he did during his original run, or at least a few years back before WrestleMania 31, which is great, but he's still not full-time. Not that he should be, but after WrestleMania, it's up in the air. I mean, after this title run is done, what do you do with Brock Lesnar? Obviously, there's been a lot of talk of bringing in Bobby Lashley and doing that feud. That's something that I would want to see, maybe build towards something at SummerSlam between those two. But beyond that, I'm good on another Brock Lesnar title run ever happening again after WrestleMania. And I said that a few years ago, and we got another one going into WrestleMania 34, so you never really know. But at this point, what else is there really for Brock Lesnar to do? And the guy's still a big draw. Like you said, he's a prize fighter, and he's one of, if not their biggest attraction at the moment. But I don't know. I mean, they've really told the Lesnar story. He's faced pretty much everyone that there is to face, from even an AJ Styles to a Samoa Joe to a John Cena and Roman Reigns multiple times. What else do you do with a guy if he's not in the title picture beyond a possible Bobby Lashley feud? So I'm more interested to see what they do with that, because Roman winning the belt has always been the end game. That's always been inevitable. But what they do with Brock coming out of WrestleMania and whether he sticks around at all is really what I'm looking forward to finding out.
Mm-hmm. And going back into the gauntlet match a little bit, again, a very great match, but do you think, I feel like there was something, one thing that was missing, and I think it was kind of hampered because the winner didn't get to be the last person to enter the Elimination Chamber. Do you think that kind of hampered the match a little bit in terms of importance and a reason to watch this match, or were you watching this and thinking, this is really good, you know? Sure, it may, that little detail is not there, but overall, the match is good.
Yeah, totally. I think it was more of the latter, but it would have helped if there was something on the line, like you said. I do appreciate with the build-up to this match that they haven't had matches like that. They had Cena and Miz where the winner, where the loser, rather, would enter first, and they had that three-way, I think, the week before with Cena, Elias, and Strowman, where the winner would enter last. So at least they've done more of that type of stuff, definitely more so with this match than they have in the past. I do not remember the last time they did something like that in the build-up to an Elimination Chamber match or a pay-per-view, whatever. So that's great. So they already did that, unfortunately. They couldn't, you know, do it again with this gauntlet match, but at least the match was great, and more people were talking about people like a Seth Rollins or a Braun Strowman coming out of it than anything else, and the fact that it wasn't really high stakes or it really wasn't all that meaningful. And, you know, to build momentum, I mean, how many times have we seen that? But at least the match was memorable and long enough to really, you know, get attention away from the fact that nothing was on the line here.
Yeah, exactly. With that, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Jeff Jarrett. Yes, the Jeff Jarrett. He's going to go into the WWE Hall of Fame. Plus, later on, we're going to talk about SmackDown, some of the problems that have been plaguing that brand, and a whole bunch more. You're listening to Wrestling With Ideas right here on CKDJ 107.9, Ottawa's new music.
The Chosen One.
Listen up, Flatnut. This is Jeff Jarrett, the King of the Mountain and founder of Global Force Wrestling. And you're listening to Wrestling with Ideas.
And welcome back inside the CKDJ studios. This is Wrestling with Ideas right here on CKDJ 107.9, Ottawa's new music. This is the show that challenges your thoughts and wrestles with ideas. I, of course, am Zach McGibbon, the man they call Gibby. And on the line with me, Bleacher Report WWE featured writer Graham GSM Matthews. And let's talk about something that I don't think both of us had ever thought in a million years would happen. Hell has officially frozen over. Jeff Jarrett has been inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. The WWE confirmed the NBC Sports announcement. And it was interesting because there was a list that was leaked out by Brad Shepard early in December. And on the list was Goldberg, which was already confirmed. Ivory also confirmed. Dudley Boys confirmed. And the two that had yet to been confirmed is Bam Bam Bigelow and Kid Rock for their celebrity wing. So Jeff Jarrett, this induction just seems straight out of left field. Jarrett did an interview with TMZ, and he said that he was contacted to be a part of the WWE Hall of Fame back in January. And it's interesting as well. I'm assuming that the talks may have started because there was the stuff with Jarrett going to rehab, but it was WWE-sponsored rehab. Maybe that's also where communications started to go there. Let's get to your thoughts, Graham. Jeff Jarrett going to the WWE Hall of Fame. Do you see Jarrett as a Hall of Famer?
You know, that's been a pretty popular discussion over the last number of days. I mean, is he Hall of Fame worthy for the WWE Hall of Fame? Obviously, he's a member of the TNA Hall of Fame as well, in addition to Kurt Angle, Sting, the Dudley Boys, all of whom are now in the WWE Hall of Fame. But nonetheless, in my personal opinion, I think so. I mean, he's not a slam dunk like a Stone Cold Steve Austin, but considering what he's done in WWE as a multi-time Intercontinental Champion, former European champion, being a memorable character, a very memorable character throughout the 90s, I don't know if I would go so far as to say is one of the greatest IC champions of all time, but he held that belt multiple times. Maybe Miz level, you know, in the maybe like the Miz equivalent to that Intercontinental Championship throughout the 1990s. And then he was obviously the chosen one in WCW, their world champion multiple times, maybe not deservedly. I don't think Jeff Jarrett, and I've always maintained this, whether it was WCW or Impact or whatever, should have never been the top guy. Jeff Jarrett is good. He's not the guy good. So I would have never put the top championship on him, but his accomplishments speak for themselves. Obviously they would never acknowledge it, but the guy started up his own company that is still running today, which a lot of people are shocked at, but it is Impact under a new name. But he did start up TNA in 2002 and he had a lot of success with that. And he obviously won a lot of championships over there, which they would never acknowledge. But to me, the WWE Hall of Fame takes in whatever they own. They take into consideration, they account for whatever they, you know, that they own the rights to, including WCW, ECW, blah, blah, blah. He obviously had a lot of success in WWE and in WCW as well. And you can always go back to the argument, oh, they have Coco Beware in there. They have Rikishi in the Hall of Fame. Obviously, that's not the greatest argument because they just put in random people whenever, whoever they really wish. But that being said, in my opinion, I do think Jeff Jarrett is a WWE Hall of Fame worthy inductee. And if nothing else, you know, the guy is seemingly back on good terms with the company. And never say never. There is no such thing as burn bridges in wrestling anymore, at least with WWE. We've seen this time and time again with people like Bruno Sammartino, Bret Hart, Ultimate Warrior, Bob Backlund, this person, that person. Just they keep on bringing back people, you know, year after year. Goldberg's another one. If you told anyone 10 years ago that Goldberg and Jeff Jarrett would be going into the same class in the WWE Hall of Fame, they would have called you crazy.
Oh, man.
But WWE has somehow found a way to, you know, merge those bridges again, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree. I actually also believe that Jeff Jarrett is a Hall of Famer. I agree as well in terms of being the top guy and putting the top championship on. And I do see that Miz level argument. I could argue that I could see maybe Jeff Jarrett back in the day, especially the WCW early TNA days, just being a guy that would compete for the top title but never actually win it. Just somebody that you'd kind of put into that main event scene just to be sort of a, I guess you could say, a guy that the champion can face and just kind of extend the title reign a little bit, because he's definitely a good worker. You can go back to his time in Memphis as well. And the stuff that he did there, you can argue nepotism because of Jerry Jarrett running Memphis, but what have you. One of the things that was also brought up as well that kind of interested me was Jarrett was the one that lost the Intercontinental Championship to China. That was over the whole ordeal with him standing up Vince for money. China's not in the Hall of Fame. And there's been some arguments of, you know, China, the first women's Intercontinental Champion to be in, is not in the Hall of Fame, but Jeff Jarrett, who many argue, like, the fact that, you know, there's a debate on whether he should be in the Hall of Fame, and more people believe China is a slam dunk Hall of Famer. Do you think at all that China has a chance to get in, or do you think that it's going to take some time as well?
No, she'll be in. She'll be in. I have no doubt about that. It's just going to take time. I know she just passed away in 2016. They like to wait a few years with people like that. It would be, I will say this, she had passed away in April of 2016 after WrestleMania that year. And after going on record, Triple H did, on the Stone Cold podcast around 3 years or so ago, around you know, at this point, saying that they would not induct her due to her porn past or whatever it might be. And then to just induct her after she dies, and that is not sending the right message. So they're going to wait a little while. Same thing with Macho Man. They wouldn't induct him. They wouldn't induct him. They're going to wait until he's dead and then induct him a few years after the fact. I mean, it sucks to wait until after someone passes away to induct them, but obviously that's going to be the case with China. So they will induct her at some point. They've actually brought her up on multiple occasions over the last number of years. I know Road Dogg name dropped her on the Raw 25 show, and he is best buds with Triple H. So he would not do that. There was not an idea that they would be inducting her at some point.
Yeah.
As you mentioned earlier, Gibby, there was that rumor that Bam Bam Bigelow will be going in this year. And usually they don't like to induct more than one deceased person per year. So I assume he'll get the nod this year, and then maybe they put her in next year. And also they don't, it's usually like one tag team, one woman, one deceased person. And stuff like that. So obviously, I think they already have Ivory. So China going in this year is pretty unlikely. But yeah. I could see them doing it next year, the year after that. It's really more a matter of when than if at this point. China is going into the WWE Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. And also, too, I think they may actually add one more person onto the list. Obviously, we had that original list that came out. We had the addition of Jeff Jarrett. There's been rumors that Mark Henry is going to go into the WWE Hall of Fame. I don't know if that's already been confirmed or not, but there's rumors at least on him. Do you see Mark Henry maybe getting added on as well, kind of being a more recent guy that's kind of like an Edge situation, obviously other than Edge's injury, just kind of a recent guy everybody knew. He had a really dominant stretch. Could he be a guy that you could see maybe going to the Hall of Fame this year?
Oh, yeah, definitely. In other words, talk kind of along the same lines as Mark Henry. He only really retired, I think, a WrestleMania last year, and he has not wrestled since, if I'm not mistaken. And he should have retired years ago. I mean, the guy would say year in and year out, oh, I'm going to retire at WrestleMania. I'm going to retire at WrestleMania. He never does. And at least at this point, it seems like he finally has. And I like Mark Henry. And I do think he is Hall of Fame worthy. He could very well go in this year. He is worthy, if only for that one stretch that he had from 2011 to 2013 as, you know, the Hall of Pain guy and just the stretch of dominance that he was on from those 2 years. But everything else he's done, a former world champion, former ECW champion, hardcore or European champion, whatever it might have been. But, yeah, the guy's held a lot of titles, had a lot of success, obviously Hall of Fame worthy in my opinion. But similar to Mark Henry, there was talk of Christian going in last year. I could see them bumping him to this year because that didn't happen last year. William Regal is another guy. I could see either one of them going in this year as well. But, he's another one of those guys, like you said, like Edge, like Shawn Michaels, where they induct him a year after he's done. Mark Henry is Hall of Fame worthy, and the same thing with him, where I feel like they might just wait until the time is right if it's not this year.
Absolutely. And one last quick thing. How much do you think the value of Global Force Gold is right now with Jeff Jarrett going to the Hall of Fame?
It's got to be through the roof. I got to sell all my Global Force Gold. I got to hold on to that stuff. It's got to be super valuable right now.
Oh, man. That's a long-term investment right there. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about SmackDown, some of the problems that have been plaguing the brand in the past couple of weeks, give our fixes for that, and we'll also get into a couple of little news that's been making their way around the wrestling circles. You're listening to Wrestling With Ideas right here on CKDJ 107.9, Ottawa's new music.
Hey, this is Buck Bagwell, and you're listening to Wrestling With Ideas.
Welcome back inside the CKDJ studios. This is Wrestling With Ideas right here on CKDJ 107.9, Ottawa's new music. This is the show that challenges your thoughts and wrestles with ideas. I, of course, am the man they call Gibby, Zach McGibbon. On the line with me, Graham GSM Matthews, WWE featured writer for Bleacher Report. And let's talk about SmackDown. There's been a lot of talk about the brand in the past couple of weeks. Public perception has been that the quality of SmackDown has been getting lower and lower each week. And many people say it's lazy booking, whether it be the constant six-man or six-woman tag team matches, I should say, with Becky Lynch, Naomi, and Charlotte versus the Riot Squad, which seemingly seems like every week. You've got also an emphasis on the authority figures with Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan. When the brand first started, they were hyping up how it wasn't going to be about the authority figures. It just seems like everything is going backwards with this brand. Do you agree that the quality of the brand has been going down? And if so, what do you think it needs to take to fix the brand up, especially with now that we're getting dual-branded pay-per-views after WrestleMania?
I mean, what a difference a year makes. You go back to this time a year ago, and SmackDown was at its peak. I mean, SmackDown was firing on all cylinders in those final few months of 2016, going into 2017. Really, I looked it up yesterday, and a lot of people would blame Road Dogg for being the creative writer as the reason why SmackDown has gone down the tubes. I looked it up yesterday. He was appointed one of the head writers of SmackDown just about a year ago, right after the Rumble, right around the Rumble time. And SmackDown was was still pretty good going into WrestleMania. It was really after the Superstar Shakeup that the show went down the tubes. We had the Jinder Mahal title reign. And even though he's dropped the title, he has not been champion for like 3.5 months at this point. The overall direction of the show has just felt lifeless. Yeah. It's been in a rut for a while now. And it was decent before. Now it's just completely pointless. The whole multi-man match thing, and Raw does it too, but SmackDown even more so, with the women especially. It's so annoying because no one gets over. Yeah. It's all multi-women this, multi-man that, with the main event scene, the tag team scene, the women's scene. You shove everyone into one match, no one gets over. It just doesn't work. I don't know what they really need to do to get back to that point. And SmackDown is by no means damaged goods. I mean, you look at 205 Live, a show that nobody cared about, but the crowds aren't going wild for it nowadays, but that's merely because it's taped after SmackDown. Though, the matches on the show are far better than they were before because Triple H took over, reportedly, so that's the reason for that. With SmackDown, I don't know if it's a change in control of whoever writes the show or just getting fresh faces on the show, you know, bringing in a guy like Seth Rollins or splitting up Owens and Zayn or bringing over Balor to the show. God knows that guy needs the move over to SmackDown right now. So I don't know. I'm just waiting for WrestleMania to be over with. I'm looking forward to AJ and Nakamura, but it seems like we won't get back to normal one-on-one feuds until after WrestleMania is over. They switch up a few people in the draft. As far as the dual brands, the dual branded pay-per-views go, not a big fan of it whatsoever, especially if we won't – if the pay-per-views won't be 4 hours, which they shouldn't be anyway because that's overkill.
Yeah.
The mid-card won't really get a chance to shine on these three-hour pay-per-views if it's both Raw and SmackDown. But even then, though, at least we get less pay-per-views. We haven't had a great SmackDown pay-per-view in close to a year since Elimination Chamber 2017, in my opinion. Clash of Champions was whatever. Hell in the Cell was Battleground was atrocious. So maybe it's for the best that we're moving back to dual branded pay-per-views so we get the top talent from each show carrying these pay-per-views. I'm not completely faithful. They'll do right by these shows. But SmackDown, yeah, something needs to change because people just – it's fallen off a cliff. People have just given up on the show in recent weeks.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I was concerned about when Road Dogg did take over, I remember a tweet that he put out and said, essentially he said that wins and losses don't really matter. And that really kind of, you know, is especially surprising because, you know, the lineage that he comes from, the Armstrong family, if you were to tell Bullet Bob Armstrong back in the day that wins and losses don't matter, I don't think he would take that very, very well. And just the way he books stuff, especially after the Jinder Mahal stuff, like, I understand you want to push a new star. You want to try and get him to be, you want to try and create some new star power, but the stuff that they've had Jinder do after the WWE Championship, it's kind of surprising that they haven't really capitalized on it and try to do something. They put him into that, into contention for the US title. But since then, his character has really been dead, I find. I think that they, again, I'm not the biggest Jinder Mahal fan, but if you're going to push somebody and you've given this guy the title for at least 6 months, and then afterwards when he drops it, he doesn't really have much to do afterwards, it's kind of astonishing to me.
Yeah, it brings back bad memories of SmackDown in like 2010. Another point where SmackDown was just in the trash. When you had Big Show and Jack Swagger main events, good God, I would not want to go back to that time in SmackDown's history. And then soon after, a lot like Jinder Mahal, after Jack Swagger dropped the belt and they had their time with the shiny new toy and Jack Swagger, he went back to being a mid-card guy. Like nothing ever happened. Like you would literally never assume that Jinder was ever WWE champion based off of how they're booking him right now. I mean, granted, he's in a better spot now than he was a year ago when he was losing Enzo Amore on Raw as a jobber over on that show. But still, I mean, he should have never been in that spot to begin with, like you said, but it really is amazing how they just go from pushing someone so strongly to literally giving up on him overnight. And the guys, I do not find him to be good at all, but they should give him more of a chance. Just that being said, there's no consistency, really, just in the general sense. Like you said, Road Dogg has said himself that wins and losses don't matter, which blows my mind, and that's exactly why SmackDown is in as bad of a state as it is right now, because when SmackDown first started, SmackDown Live, I should say, back in 2016, it truly did feel like wins and losses mattered. When AJ Styles beat John Cena at SummerSlam, he was immediately in contention for the WWE title because wins and losses mattered. Whenever someone wins a big match in the show, you forget about it by the next week because they go back to 50-50 booking. It happens with the women all the time. The Riot Squad cannot win a match to save their lives. And now they finally win a match on Tuesday. And Ruby Riot is just inserted into the title picture for no reason. And I like Ruby Riot, but it's like there's no consistency whatsoever. They cannot, you know, devote any real time to one person to get that person over, which is why no one means anything. No one means anything at all. Like Dolph Ziggler is a prime example of a guy where they give a big win to him every once and again. But overall, the guy's a loser. Baron Corbin, the guy's a loser. They just do not invest in anyone. And the overall booking of the show just screams pure laziness to me.
Yeah, and I agree. And the one thing that as well that really exemplifies the laziness in the booking for me is this top 10 list that they've released. There's nothing really to it other than these are the top 10 wrestlers. Like they've included the tag teams, the women, and of course the male wrestlers. And they've incorporated this and there hasn't really been that much in terms of creating storylines out of it saying, hey, I want that number one spot. I'm going to challenge you to become the number one guy or anything like that and maybe do like a UFC power ranking sort of deal. It's just kind of there and they keep mentioning it, but there's really not much point to this list.
Nah, the top 10 list is a total waste. I mean, it could have been something. It could have been something because I like the idea of them doing, you know, something with the top 10 list to determine new contenders and who's worthy. But the thing is that you can't really have full faith in a show with SmackDown recently that we literally just said it. If Road Dogg himself, the guy who writes these shows, not by himself, but he's obviously one of the head writers, if he himself had said that wins and losses don't matter, then what the hell is the point of a top 10 list? Like that to me makes absolutely no sense. When you have a guy like Ty Dillinger, who has not won a match since he was probably in NXT, he's number 10 just to be cute and give him the 10 spot in the top 10 list, even though he hasn't won a match in probably 6 months, makes no sense. Why would anyone take that seriously? It's just the SmackDown booking has gotten to be so bad, it's almost comical. Yeah. It's almost comical. Not quite comical, but it's almost at that point where it's just I've almost given up on the booking with the show. And again, it can be fixed. But currently, it's like, why even bother watching the show when you know it's going to happen? And not only that, but just nothing matters. Literally nothing matters with this show, which is what bothers me so much. And it wouldn't be so bad if SmackDown wasn't so good, you know, a year ago. And it was the best show to watch in all of WWE, even better than NXT most weeks. But it hasn't been that way for a while. And it's going to take some major rehabbing coming out of WrestleMania to fix that.
Yeah, and one of the things that people are saying is should be one of the fixes is this fire Road Dogg thing that's been going on. Do you think Road Dogg has to be removed from his position as head writer on SmackDown? Or do you think they've just kind of like maybe do like a booking committee like they did with WCW back in the early 90s and just get a couple of writers together? What's your idea on how to fix SmackDown and try and get it into make it better and get it into the promised land again?
I don't know if firing Road Dogg is the answer, but something's got to change. I don't know what it is, but I know for a fact that before Road Dogg, and I'm not sure if he's still there, I believe he is. Maybe it's just his ideas aren't being heard. But when SmackDown first started, they had brought in Ryan Ward, who had wrote NXT for a long time, which is why NXT for a while there was kind of in a weird holding pattern in late 2016, early 2017, before they kind of find that magic again. But Ryan Ward was the one writing those shows for SmackDown coming out of the brand split. And NXT booking kind of carried over into SmackDown where wins and losses mattered. I mean, what a concept. But SmackDown kind of followed that same pattern as NXT where things mattered, things made sense, there was long-term storytelling. Things were advertised a week out that made sense, that weren't, you know, scrapped at the last minute. You know, save for a few storylines, people like James Ellsworth, which served no purpose for the most part. But beyond that, you know, SmackDown would do a lot of things that made sense and that were entertaining, a lot like NXT would for a while and still does to this day. When Road Dogg took over, they completely changed their approach to how they booked the shows because you could just look at a show from now compared to a year and a half ago. And it's a totally different show. It's like it's not even close. So you could tell that someone different is booking the shows, that being Road Dogg. I don't know. I don't know if they need to replace Road Dogg or bring someone else in. Or I don't know if Ryan Ward is still there or give him back the head control. I mean, I would say Triple H because obviously he's done wonders for NXT and 205 Live. But that might not happen for a while to come. But just bottom line, something's got to change. And the change starts at the top. So maybe firing Road Dogg or demoting him or putting him on Raw or something along those lines might be for the best. It's worth trying because right now SmackDown could not get any more pointless than it is right now.
Yeah, and I think, too, I don't think they're going to fire Road Dogg per se, but I think they're going to remove him from his position as head writer and probably put him somewhere else in the company. One of the things as well, the final infuriating thing that I want to talk about, no Rusev in the past 2 weeks, probably one of the more over guys past couple of months with the whole Rusev Day shtick. It's just kind of shocking to me that you don't want to capitalize on that, especially when your TV is being criticized for not being entertaining, being lackluster, and you've got this guy who is over. He's got a great thing going. His t-shirts are selling. He's selling Rusev Day calendars, the whole nine yards, and you don't have him on TV for a second straight week.
How do you not have Rusev on SmackDown on Rusev Day? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. For two straight weeks, you do not feature Rusev on the show on Rusev Day. Just, it's ass backwards booking. But nonetheless, yeah, the guy is very entertaining at the peak of his popularity right now, and he's far from the only one. There's a lot of guys that, if they're not involved in a storyline, they're not on TV. Like Shinsuke Nakamura, didn't that guy just win the Royal Rumble? I know they did a video package on him on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
That's fine. But it's like, the guy wasn't even on the show last week. You would have even completely forgotten that the guy won the Royal Rumble. They had not shown the video package for him this week. Will he even be at the pay-per-view? Like, they could very easily book a Nakamura, Nakamura, Rusev feud, excuse me.
Yeah.
A filler feud for Rusev going into, or Nakamura going into the pay-per-view. But they have, 1-2 weeks to book that at this point? So, again, it's just, they have 2 hours. I'm not saying SmackDown should be 3 hours. They have a very large depth of talent over on SmackDown. Not everyone's going to be on the show. But a backstage segment, a vignette for someone like a Rusev goes a long way in allowing them to maintain the momentum. Because if they're not on TV, out of sight, out of mind, people will just stop caring after a while. Maybe not with Rusev, because people love the guy right now, but I don't know. Just, again, it goes to just show that it doesn't matter how over you are, if you're not booked by the company, if you're not one of their guys, they don't care. So it's unfortunate. It's a sad story, but it seems like that's the case with Rusev, and they won't capitalize off the popularity that has right now with Rusev Day.
Exactly. With that, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk some of the other news that's making their way around the wrestling circles. You're listening to Wrestling With Ideas right here on CKDJ 107.9, Ottawa's new music.
Brooklyn, Brooklyn. Yo, 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 it's your boy JTG, and you are listening to Wrestling With Ideas. Chill. Hey,
yo, no more Hollywood. This is Hollywood. And welcome back inside CKDJ Studios. This is Wrestling With Ideas right here on CKDJ 107.9. Ottawa's new music. This is the show that challenges your thoughts and wrestles with ideas. I'm the man they call Gibby, Zach McGibbon. And on the line with me, Graham GSM Matthews, WWE featured writer from Bleacher Report. Let's talk into some of the smaller news, but definitely want to talk about that's making their way around the wrestling circles. First thing, Ring of Honor officially launched their streaming service, Honor Club. It's going to be pretty much similar to WWE. They've got the $9.99 deal going as well. But one of the things that kind of makes them unique is that they're going to give you exclusive deals on merchandise, on tickets, that sort of stuff. One of the things to note as well for big Ring of Honor fans from around 2002 to 2008 when Gabe Sapolsky was booking Ring of Honor, that content isn't up there yet. It's TV that they were on previously, HDNet, and their TV from 2010 upwards to now, I believe. But they haven't gotten anything, any of the content beforehand. So, Graham, with this streaming service, do you think it could be competitive to WWE? Do you think there's going to be some people that will buy the Honor Club for $9.99 a month?
Yeah, totally. I think a lot of people will buy it. I just bought it the other day. I mean, I knew they were creating a streaming service. I didn't know they would be dropping it on Monday. I literally woke up to the news and I was like, wow, I did not know they were dropping it. They were airing like video packages and, you know, teasers for it, like it's coming soon. They never announced the date, so that was a little weird and obviously had its bugs. I signed up for it the first day. I couldn't watch anything on my computer because everything, the site had crashed like several times. They're not WWE, and WWE had issues with their streaming service from day one. Impact had issues with their streaming service too. So it's just going to take time for them to work out the bugs. It's only been around for 2 days at this point. I mean, it's working now on my laptop. It also worked on my phone too for anyone experiencing similar issues. I signed up for the regular. It's $9.99, but they have different tier pricing. You can pay annually for $100, but so you're saving money that way. Or you could just pay $119 up front, which you would be doing if you pay monthly anyway. But if you just pay the $120 right up front, you get all the content that you just mentioned, Gibby, and the pay-per-views as they stream live. And I asked someone last night if they would put them up as soon as the pay-per-views are over, the upcoming pay-per-views, and they said yes. So I think that's well worth it. You're still paying the same amount of money. You're just paying it up front, obviously. And you get all the pay-per-views. You're saving money that way. And yeah, I don't know. I think all the content that they have up there currently is good. I think the real money with Ring of Honor is that early stuff that you mentioned that's not up there yet. Why that's not up there, I have no idea. Those pay-per-views, because that's really what people want to see. The pay-per-views since 2011 have been great, but it's like people want to see CM Punk, Austin Aries, Samoa Joe, all these other people, you know, Bryan Danielson, Seth Rollins, and we don't currently have that. They didn't. There's not many details available about the service, which is weird, so I don't know if they planned it. Add that at some point. I'm not really sure what they're going for here, but all I know is that you do get the pay-per-views for free or 50% off if you get the regular pricing. I just paid the $120 up front so I can get the pay-per-views because that seems to me like a good deal. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing as the WWE Network, just a different style of pricing and just payments and stuff. But so far, so good. The content they do have up there so far is solid. I would well recommend people check it out. As far as being a rival to WWE, currently no. Without that early content up there, probably definitely not. At some point, probably not. Ring of Honor just has a weird way of promoting stuff. They're not great with promotion, better than Impact, but just they don't do a great job with promoting stuff and whatever. There's just not a lot of buzz around this thing because they really haven't talked about it all too much.
No.
But I think it will be a great asset to the company. People are going this way anyway. WWE did it almost exactly 4 years ago. Impact did it back late last year. A lot of indie companies are doing it. Ring of Honor, it was only a matter of time before they did it as well. So here's hoping the service does improve with more time.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was pointed out as well, which I found quite fascinating, it's amazing what could happen, you know, going from regular pay-per-view now to these streaming services. You can now watch a Ring of Honor pay-per-view, a TNA Impact Wrestling pay-per-view, a WWE pay-per-view, and if you even wanted to add a UFC pay-per-view with the Fight Pass, and you could still get it less than what a normal pay-per-view would be like 10 years ago. It's crazy just how things change in the wrestling business. One last quick thing on the Ring of Honor streaming service. Mentioning that early content, I know you were saying how it wasn't too much of a deal breaker for you, but do you think it may be a deal breaker for kind of the older Ring of Honor fans that kind of grew up on that, or I should say kind of watched it when it was first breaking out? It's not there. They can't go back and revisit some of the great, you know, Punk versus Samoa Joe matches, the Danielson versus McGuinness match, Joe versus Kenta Kobashi, the whole deal. Do you think that's kind of a deal breaker for some people, or do you think more people are focused with what's going on with Ring of Honor that won't be too much of a deal breaker?
Oh, no, definitely a deal breaker. Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people were... I didn't see a lot of outrage online. I know there's message boards and stuff with the website and stuff like that, but people were pretty pissed about that just because that was what people liked about the promotion for a long time. Obviously, I was not watching at that point, so it's not really that important to me, though I do want to see it. I do want to see that old stuff. So for me, it wasn't much of a deal breaker, but like you said, for those longtime Ring of Honor fans, it absolutely is. Those were the golden years of their promotion from 2002 to 2008, 2010, whatever. A lot of great feuds, a lot of great matches. I don't know why they wouldn't have put that up there to begin with. Like, that would make a whole lot of sense. WWE put all their pay-per-views up with the WWE Network. They didn't, I know with the Raws and stuff, it took them years to upload every Raw ever, but still, I mean, they had all the pay-per-views up there from day one. With the Impact one, the Global Wrestling Network, all the pay-per-views were there. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why Ring of Honor is not doing the same thing, or if they intend to roll them out. That really confused me. So definitely a deal breaker for other people. Like you had said, not so much for me. I mean, I do want to see that at some point. It's kind of jipping people off, especially if they don't know that.
Yeah.
Cause it doesn't say that on the website too. I was looking, I was trying to find out like what it offers before I signed up for it. And once it said the pay-per-views, that's when I signed up for that one. Cause I really care more so about the current pay-per-views than the old ones, mm-hmm. but there's just not that much information out there. They don't really, it doesn't say on there all the pay-per-views from 2011 onward. It doesn't even say that, I don't think.
No.
So they're kind of jipping people if you sign up and you find out those and those classic shows aren't on there. So that's kind of crappy. But again, hopefully at some point they will update it to include those events, because that's some classic content right there.
Mm-hmm. And moving onwards, let's talk some of the stuff in 205 Live. We were mentioning earlier how it seems like this brand has been revitalized thanks to the new direction under Triple H. The Cruiserweight Tournament bracket for the quarterfinals were announced. So it's going to be Cedric Alexander versus TJP, Roderick Strong versus Kalisto, which is a match I'm actually kind of looking forward to. I think that'd be a fun little match. Buddy Murphy versus Mustafa Ali, and Drew Gulak versus Mark Andrews. Interesting what they're doing with Buddy Murphy. They actually forced him to cut down to 205. They were still implementing the old Cruiserweight Classic rules for Buddy Murphy. And I don't know if you heard too much about Murphy kind of from live events and just some of the reports, but they were saying how this guy is like really, really good in the ring and he should be on TV soon. So it's nice to see that they're giving him a chance on 205 Live. What do you think of the 205 Live revitalization? Are you enjoying the tournament so far? And do you think these matchups are something that people should look forward to?
It's been a total 180 with 205 Live compared to what it was even 1 month ago. The show was, it was a nothing show. Nothing ever happened that was worth going out of your way to see on 205 Live. But it's been a completely different show with the tournament. Will it be the same show coming out of WrestleMania is the real question. Because tournaments are easy to book. People love the CWC. But when it's back to regularly scheduled programming, you have to book feuds and do promos and stuff like that. Will it be the same show? Like, that's the real question right now. We might find out well before WrestleMania, because based on how this tournament is going and the matches they're doing on each show, they're doing two quarterfinal matches next week, the next two the week after that, and then like 3 weeks, I'm sure they'll do the semifinal. So it seems like they're speeding up the process here. I thought the tournament would carry the show all the way through WrestleMania, but it's late February. WrestleMania is not until early April, so it seems like they'll have plenty of time to, you know, book a feud between whoever the finalists are at WrestleMania. That being said, I've enjoyed the show so far. The tournament's been very, very good. This past week was probably the weakest out of all of them, but still solid. The Gallagher-Ali match was very good. Buddy Murphy impressed me. Like you said, the guy has gotten rave reviews from his work on the house show circuit in NXT with a guy, you know, Aleister Black and Velveteen Dream, guys like that. He's very, very talented. I've known that since day one. Not to say I've followed him since the indie scene or anything, but I've heard a lot of good things about him dating back to his early days in NXT. It always it boggled my mind why they weren't doing more with him. And the tag team with Wesley Blake really, it was fine, but it really did nothing to allow him to showcase his skills. He did more to impress me with that match on Tuesday than anything else I've ever seen him do in NXT, just because he was never really given a chance to shine. And he was on the house shows and stuff, but never on TV. So, and he was going nowhere fast on that brand. And NXT is great, but they have so much star power right now. He was never, ever going to get beyond a certain level, even if they did feature him. So putting him on 205 Live under the direction of Triple H is a great idea. You have a guy like Roderick Strong, Mark Andrews coming in. So they got a lot of great talent on the show. They need to obviously put some new talent on the show with people being injured. Noam Dar, Kendrick, Rich Swann is gone. Austin Aries is gone. Neville's likely out of here. Enzo Amore is gone. They need to kind of refill that talent pool. So bringing in people like that, I think, is very smart. I'm looking forward to seeing what else they do with the tournament and the rest of the direction of 205 Live. And for anyone who has not been tuning into 205 Live recently, you're missing out. There's been some great matches on the show in recent weeks. Drew Gulak and Tony Nese and Strong and Hideo Itami comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And one last quick thing. CM Punk on Twitter is kind of teasing people with the recent All In events that Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks are putting together. He tweeted out, "Recently, a lot of people have been asking me if I'm quote-unquote in, and it left a lot of people speculating, but of course, the next tweet he put out was, 'You know I'm in,' and it's a picture of him with, or rather, a graphic that says, 'In for the Chicago Cubs, hashtag everybody in.'" Teasing everybody about this All-In event. A lot of people have been saying if this All-In event can get 10,000 people, CM Punk will definitely be the guy that can bring the people to the arena. Do you think there's a chance at all that Punk returns to wrestling and wrestles at this All-In event? He doesn't have to wrestle for Vince. He doesn't have to see Triple H, and he can help support his friends. That we know that Punk and the Young Bucks are buddies. He can help support his friends in trying to put this show together. Do you think there's even a remote chance that we could see Punk return and wrestle at All-In?
Honestly, yes. Obviously, I'm not banking on it. I think more so the question is it even contractually, could it even happen? Because obviously he's with UFC. He's got a fight coming up, which I think was confirmed a few weeks ago against Mike Jackson or something at a UFC show coming up in Chicago in June. So obviously All-In's in September, so they could do it. I mean, I don't know if would they allow him. Could he do indie shows if it's not for WWE? I have no clue. But if he could pull it off, it'd be pretty sweet. He wouldn't even have to wrestle. He could just have him make an appearance. That would put butts in the seats for sure. No doubt. If CM Punk at an indie event for the first time in close to 4 or 5 years, that would absolutely put butts in the seats for All In. So that would be awesome. I'd be all in for that. No pun intended. I would love to see it. Will it happen? Probably not. Very likely not. People should not get their hopes up.
Yeah.
But if it's going to happen for any promotion, it would be, or for any show, it would be All In. I mean, I think Ring of Honor would be cool too, but I don't know. I think an All In would be cool for Punk just because he wouldn't have to deal with politics or TV or any of that. Coming in for a quick one-off just to get it out of his system. Because you know deep down, you know he says he doesn't like wrestling anymore, doesn't watch it. You know deep down he still has a passion for it, even if it's deep, 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 deep down. And he would definitely kill to do a show like that where it's kind of sticking it in the face of WWE saying like, hey, you know, we could do a show this big without the company backing us up. So you never know. I mean, he's been going back and forth with Young Bucks for a while now on Twitter. When it's not completely out of the realm of possibility, I'm not banking on it, but it would be money, no doubt.
And I think one, you were mentioning an appearance. I think what could also really sell money if they can't have him wrestle is just promote the fact that he's going to be there and he's going to have a live microphone. He's going to say whatever he feels like about the wrestling business. I think a lot of people would gravitate towards that as well. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to finish up the show. Going to talk a little story about, I don't know if you saw this on Twitter, just the whole deal with Abby Arthur. And we're going to talk about that story. You're listening to Wrestling with Ideas right here on CKDJ 107.9, Ottawa's new music.
Hey, this is Cody Rhodes, and you are listening to Wrestling with Ideas.
Welcome back inside the CKDJ studios. This is Wrestling with Ideas right here on CKDJ 107.9, Ottawa's new music. The show that challenges your thoughts and wrestles with ideas. I'm the man they call Gibby, Zach McGibbon, and on the line with me, Graham GSM Matthews, WWE featured writer for Bleacher Report. And I want to tell a little story about Abby Arthur to finish things off. Have you heard the whole ordeal, what happened on Twitter with Abby Arthur? And I guess to a certain extent what happened with Chris Regal from TNA Mecca?
Only just in the last couple of days. I'm not super, super entrenched into wrestling Twitter. I mean, if you're a wrestling fan and you're on Twitter, you're a part of wrestling Twitter. But yeah. I'm not too, too far into it where I follow all this stuff. But I did read up on it on Sunday, and my mind was blown, to say the least.
Vince Russo couldn't have booked something any better than this. It was It's just crazy what happened on Twitter. If you were on Twitter, I believe this was this past Saturday, I think the whole ordeal went down. It was the 17th. If you were looking through your Twitter timeline, you would have seen there was a wrestling writer from the Angry Marks website. I know actually a couple people from that website as well. Great guys. She had also been a co-host on a podcast there. She had announced on her Twitter that she had cancer. And so she put out a GoFundMe page to help treat her cancer. And she was able to get a little over $10,000 for her GoFundMe. And during that time, she was posting up pictures of her in at the hospital taking the treatment. But people started to do a little bit of digging. And they did some reverse photo searches. And they found that she had actually been taking photos of other cancer patients in different hospitals and claiming it was her. And so when the pressure started to go on this past Saturday, she faked her death. It's quite astonishing. She locked and protected her Twitter account, and her sister, quote unquote sister, took over the account and said, "I am her sister. You people killed her, essentially. You led her to commit essentially suicide." And she went as far as to fake a doctor's note to talk about the whole ordeal with her cancer. But you knew it was fake by the litany of spelling errors that were in the document. And as things were starting to really unravel, and she's more than likely going to go to jail for scamming people out of money and fraud. But one of the best, I guess you could say best things to come out of this, if you're familiar with the TNA Mecha site, it is essentially a TNA diehard wrestling fan site. A lot of Impact Wrestling fans are there. And essentially, they've gotten the reputation of there's nothing wrong with TNA, there's nothing wrong with Impact Wrestling, everything's good, it's just these WWE loyalists, I guess they say, that are really going after TNA, and it's really unfair. The head guy at TNA Mecha announced beforehand that he had cancer, and then eventually he passed away last January, I believe, and TNA Mecha announced his passing. The TNA official TNA Impact Wrestling Twitter account retweeted that he had passed away. Impact Wrestlers retweeted that he passed away. And so when all this whole ordeal came out, guess who decided to come out of the ashes and announce that he had also faked his death by none other than Chris Regal as well of TNA Mecha. What a swerve there was at the end. So that's essentially the moral of the story is please don't fake your own death and don't use cancer to try and scam money, people. Please don't. It's just you get these insane ordeals that happen on Twitter and you get what happens on your Twitter timeline. It just everybody, at least on my end, on the Twitter timeline, it was just all over my Twitter page and a whole bunch of the thing that took me away about it, blew me away, I guess I should say. Was some of the wrestling journalists that started to pick up on this story and just do some searches. Just incredible. Just how things turned out. But with that, we're going to end the show here. End the show on a bang, I guess. Thanks for coming on, Graham. I really appreciate you joining on to Wrestling With Ideas. And thank you for bringing your insight onto the show.
Absolutely, Gibby. Thank you for having me on the show. Had a blast. And yeah, hopefully we talk again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. If there's anything you want to plug, some of the different things that you're working on, go on right ahead as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm on Twitter, at WrestleRant. Like you said, I write for Bleacher Report, What Culture. I'm on HiddenRemote.com. Just simply search up Graham Giusa Matthews. I'm pretty much everywhere. Facebook, YouTube, all that stuff. Again, just type in Graham Giusa Matthews, pretty much on all the platforms, writing-wise, social media-wise, and whatnot. And also, NextDayWrestling.net and iTunes. You can check out WrestleRant Radio every Thursday. Gibby's been here on the show as well before. So I appreciate that and everyone who else has listened and contributed to the show over the years. So Gibby, once again, thanks for having me on, dude. I appreciate it.
Hey, it's glad to have you on. And of course, you can tune into Wrestling With Ideas every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern right here on CKDJ 107.9. And then you can listen to the podcast edition of the show afterwards. We usually release it sometime over the weekend between Friday and Sunday, depending on how school goes and how the editing goes as well, doing interviews and that sort of stuff. And I'm actually also, before we end things off, I guess I should make an announcement here too. We've got an interview as well for next week. He has made some headways for, I guess, a match announcement that was recently made by Joey Janela for Spring Break 2. We're going to have Pierre-Carl Ouellette on the show. We're going to have an interview with him, and that's going to be going on next week as well. So stay tuned for that. But until then, have a good one.
You have just listened to the greatest wrestling show on the planet.
If you want to listen to older episodes of the show, including full interviews, make sure you check out Wrestling With Ideas on Podbean and on the Podbean app, or listen to us on our new SoundCloud page. We can also be found on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, and many more.
Make sure you keep on tuning in every Thursday at 6 p.m. to Wrestle With Ideas.